What does God's never-changing love look like? Well, here's Skip Heitzig with one possibility.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon, one of my favorite old dead preachers, said that he visited a man on a farm who had a weather vane on the top of his barn. And it was a very unusual weather vane because not only did it spin around in different directions with the wind, but on the main part of the weather vane were the words, God is love. God is love. And so Spurgeon said, are you by that trying to show that God's love changes like the wind? No, he said, what I'm trying to say is that no matter which way the wind blows, God is always love.
Make the connection at the foot of the cross. Study the word of God and find the way into his love. And take the time to read, for Jesus took the time.
Judgment is a very circumstantial word. As long as it applies to someone who we deem as having done something wrong, judgment is a good thing. However, when we're the ones being judged, suddenly it's not such a good thing. In fact, we might feel it's very unfair. Maybe that's why most people don't spend a lot of time in the minor prophets. We don't like reading about God's judgment and prefer just to hear about his love and blessings. Well, today in The Connection, Skip Heitzig explains how the two are intertwined, how God's judgment is often a result of his love and can lead us to greater blessings. We'll find out more in a moment, but before we do, adoption is a wonderful way to bless a child, but it can be tricky to navigate. This month, we want to offer you a little help with that.
Nelson Mandela, Andrew Jackson, Babe Ruth, and Louis Armstrong. What do all of these diverse people have in common? They were all orphans. Now, these are well-known personalities who overcame a difficult childhood. But today, there are 2 million nameless orphans in America and millions more worldwide. Here's Steve Todd from AFMIN Ministries with a perspective from the situation in Africa.
There's an increasing number of orphan children, and there's no family for them to take care of, so the church families are doing their best, but they're trying to build. And I know it sounds silly, you know, build out of mud and sticks, but it actually costs something for some of these facilities to be built, so we're raising money for an orphanage.
Maybe you could be an answer to the prayers of a little lonely child. At The Connection, we're offering the book, Successful Adoption, A Guide for Christian Families. Order yours when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. Successful Adoption covers cost, paperwork, and steps to start the process. Order your copy of Successful Adoption when you call 1-800-922-1888. You can make a difference today in a young life. Explore more about adoption by ordering the book, Successful Adoption, A Guide for Christian Families. Just call 800-922-1888 or order online at connectionradio.org. Order Successful Adoption from The Connection right now. Call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org.
And you can always find out more about some of the resources we offer by dropping us a line at info@connectionradio.org. You know, you may not spend a lot of time in the books we're about to cover today, but I think you'll discover that these less often visited sections of the Bible are just as rich and relevant as the ones we're most familiar with. Stay with us as we continue through the Bible from 30,000 feet.
And make the
We'll start our study today in the book of Zephaniah, so if you'll open your Bibles, we'll join Skip Heitzig as he talks a bit about just how lonely this book often is.
I want to start by saying, poor Zephaniah. Poor Zephaniah. You know, he's a neglected fella. I could prove it. How many of you have heard a sermon in the book of Zephaniah lately? Raise your hands. How many of you have ever heard a sermon on the book of Nehemiah in your whole life? Raise your hands. Okay, a few of you. Where'd you hear it at? here. Okay. So, maybe that wasn't totally fair. But, you know, he is a neglected prophet. It's a neglected book. It's a small book. It's hard to find. Some people may still be trying to shuffle around and go, where's that book at? It's tucked back there somewhere. All those other short little books with weird names in it. He's mistaken for Zechariah sometime, which is a different prophet. We're going to talk about next week as we finish out the Old Testament. And because of the theme, he packs a punch. He's a short little book with a heavy-duty punch and a very powerful message. And it's not a message that necessarily we would want to read a lot, or we would make it our life verse, for instance. I have yet to find somebody who said, you know, my life verse is Zephaniah chapter whatever, verse whatever. It's a message of judgment. It sounds like a hard message, but let's call it this, the dark side of love. The dark side of love. And let me illustrate that by a little story. There once was a man who stood over the bed of a young girl. And as she looked up at that tall, imposing figure of a man, she started screaming. And the mother rushed in the room and grabbed her little girl. The man went out of the room, got on the phone, and set a plan in motion with another man on the other end of the telephone. And so the man then quickly rushed back into the room, took the screaming little girl into his arms, rushed out, and put her in the back seat of his car and squealed his tires out of the parking lot and took her to a very plain, drab-looking building, to the top floor where there was a single light on the ceiling, and there a man who was talking on the other end of the telephone plunged a knife into the young girl. Now you hear that story and you go, that is horrible. That's cruel. Well, let me fill in the details. The man who drove the girl was the father of the girl. The girl was his daughter. She burst her appendix. He took her to a hospital. And on the top floor where there was a surgery suite, the man who took the knife was a surgeon with a scalpel who operated on the girl to save her life by taking out the ruptured appendix. And you go, okay, I get it. And so that's what you have to do with some of the stories and some of the themes like Zephaniah. He talks about a God who loves his people enough to hurt them in order that he might heal them. He's like the surgeon with the scalpel, plunging the scalpel in, carefully performing an operation. And so this prophet looks through judgment to blessing. That's the theme of the book. Through judgment to blessing. Looking past the judgment that God says must come upon a nation that has sinned. But in the end, the hurting is to bring healing. He's a very, very good physician. So through judgment to healing. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, one of my favorite old dead preachers, said that he visited a man on a farm who had a weather vane on the top of his barn. And it was a very unusual weather vane because not only did it spin around in different directions with the wind, but on the main part of the weather vane were the words, God is love. God is love. And so Spurgeon said, are you by that trying to show that God's love changes like the wind? No, he said, what I'm trying to say is that no matter which way the wind blows, God is always love. And this prophet basically in three chapters tells us that the wind of judgment will blow through, but God is love. The wind of blessing is eventually going to come, and it's because God is love. And so we as children of God shouldn't question when the wind is blowing against us in adversity and say, this can't be of God. God wouldn't allow this to happen. Hey, God might have caused this to happen because he wants something good to come out of it. As God says, he's going to bring judgment through the Babylonians. Now, I want to teach you two words tonight. Two new words. You ready? You can impress all your friends. Pre-exilic and post-exilic. Just remember those words. Because the prophets, the minor prophets, break up into those two sections. They're either pre-exilic prophets. That is, they wrote before the exile, before the Babylonian captivity of 70 years, or they are post-exilic. They were written after the exile, the Babylonian captivity of 70 years. Pre-exilic and post-exilic. By the way, you also have a third category, and that is exilic prophets. Prophets who wrote during the exile. Daniel was an exilic prophet. Ezekiel, an exilic prophet. But Jeremiah, Isaiah, and most all of the others were before pre-exilic prophets. There are three prophets that are post-exile or post-exilic prophets. And one is Haggai. That's the one we're going to cover next, right after this, in just a minute. And then the last two of the Old Testament, Zechariah and Malachi. Both of those were written after the exile. So now you learn three new words. Tell all your friends about pre, post, and exilic prophets. Now, something about Zechariah. Or excuse me. See, I'm going to get it messed up now. Zephaniah. The prophet Zephaniah was the prophet of the 11th hour. The 11th hour. Let me explain. You know, prophets would come at different times and give messages. But every now and then, you'd have a group of people listening to what the prophet said and thereby turning the judgment or keeping the judgment away for a period of time. Certain things happen, the hearts of the people would respond. It is believed that because of Zephaniah's ministry, that the reforms of Josiah the king started. Now I want to explain that. If you remember back in your history, there was a king of Judah named Josiah. And Josiah was 8 years old when he became king. You go, a politician, a ruler of a nation, an eight-year-old kid? Well, he actually did a lot better job than a lot of politicians who've been doing it a long time. Because his heart was after the Lord. He was seeking the Lord. When he was 16 years of age, 8 years into his reign, you know what he did? He started finding all of the false altars of Baal, breaking them down, grinding them to powder, taking the bones of the priests who had worshipped on those false altars and burned those bones and scattered their ashes. And then, when he was 26 years of age, they were cleaning out the temple, and he gave a large sum of government money to fix the temple. They found a book of the law, and when the law was brought before King Josiah and it was read, and Josiah realized, man, we have fallen away from God. A massive reform happened to the people. And they turned back to God and they celebrated the Passover. And it is believed that the preaching of this prophet Zephaniah was one of the key components during that time to bring the people back to God. He was the 11th hour prophet. So the theme, once again, is through the judgment to the blessing. And so judgment and blessing are the two main themes of this book. And you could divide the book up by three chapters, basically. I'll give you the exact divisions, but there's three chapters. It's a very short book. I think there's, 53 verses in this short book. 38 verses in the very next book. It's a very short book. But the three chapters are the three major themes. Chapter number one is look within, look within. Chapter number two, look around. And then chapter number three, look beyond. So chapter one, verse one, all the way to chapter two, verse three, is where they're told to look within. Look within your walls, O Jerusalem, and see all of the things that I, the Lord God, am going to judge Jerusalem and Judah for. As you look within, you'll discover why the judgment is coming on you. But then, chapter 2, verse 4, all the way to chapter 3, verse 8, they're told to look around. And they look around at different nations, north, south, east, and west of Israel, as all of them are called into judgment by God. And then eventually they're called to look beyond. And beginning in verse 9 of chapter 3 to all the way to verse 20 is there to look beyond the judgment in Jerusalem, beyond the judgment to the nations, and to the blessing that is going to come in the future. So let's look at verse 1, chapter 1, the word of the Lord, which came to Zephaniah, the son of Cushi, the son of Gedaliah, the son of Amariah, the son of Hezekiah, There's a lot of ayahs there. In the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, the king of Judah. Now, why are all of those names put in the first verse? To let you know that this prophet was directly related to the royal class of Judah. He's the great-great-grandson of King Hezekiah, the great reformer king of Judah, which makes him a cousin to King Josiah, who is presently on the throne. So that genealogy is placed there. In verse 4, I will stretch out my hand against Judah and against all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. I will cut off every trace of Baal from this place. The names of the idolatrous priests with the pagan priests. Those who worship the host of heaven on the housetops. This was astrology worship. They worshiped the stars, the sun, the moon on altars that were atop their roofs. Those who worship and swear oaths by the Lord, but who also swear by Milcom or Molech, a Phoenician god. Now here's the deal. Here's the deal. They said they loved God. They loved Yahweh. They worshiped in the temple, all that stuff. They said that. And they were going through the motions of temple worship. But at the same time, they were worshiping other things, other gods, other modes of worship. So they would blend their worship together. It's called syncretism. It's like saying, you know, I'm going to go to church every Sunday because it's going to make me feel really good that I go to church every Sunday. And it's really good to show my kids that I go to church every Sunday. Then I'm going to live any way I want to live. God is saying, you know what? I see that. I'm going to do something about that. You can't live that way. That's not commitment. That's not devotion. So verse 6, those who have turned back from following the Lord and have not sought the Lord nor inquired of him. So as I said, in ancient times, the rooftops were flat, sort of like New Mexico. But on the top of their roof, it was like an open place where the family would gather in the summer. Sometimes they'd spend the nights out there. But pagans and now Israelites, those down in Judah, put altars on top of their roof in view of the sky and in view of the sun and the moon and the stars, a practice known as Sabianism. And they believe that the constellations and the movement of the heavens and their prayer to the gods who govern the heavens would alter their future. You say, oh, well, that's so old-fashioned and that's so pagan. That's so primitive. Really? 40 million Americans believe in astrology. Today, in our modern technological culture, there are three times more astrologers in our country, along with psychics, as there are clergymen in this country. And the American public eats it up. So it's not so ancient a practice, it just gets repackaged. So look at verse 10. And there shall be on that day, says the Lord, the sound of a mournful cry from the fish gate. And you're thinking, what does that have to do with me in 2008? A wailing from the second quarter, a loud crashing from the hills. Wail, you inhabitants of Moktesh, for all the merchant people are cut down. All those who handle money are cut off. Now what he's doing is he's warning the merchants of the city of Jerusalem, who would bring their wares in and out of the fish gate, down through the Moktesh, which I'll explain in just a moment. And there they would buy and sell. And here's the point. An invasion is coming of this city of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, that it's going to wipe out all of their economy, all of their hope, all of their joy will be gone by the Babylonian invasion of 586 BC. Jerusalem is an interesting place. It's built among a configuration of several hills. On the east side, the Mount of Olives. On the western side, the Western Hill or Mount Zion. And then smaller little hills all the way around it. Those hills also have valleys, and there's three major valleys. On the eastern side is the Kidron Valley. On the southwestern side, touching the Kidron, is called the Valley of Hinnom or Gehenna. So the idea of hell comes from that burning, the valley where the garbage was burned. So you have the Kidron Valley, you have the Hinnom Valley, and right in between a short, shallow valley called the Tyropian Valley. And in the Tyropian Valley, where the city of Jerusalem is in sort of a lowland area, that's where the marketplace was. And that's here the idea of the Valley of Moktesh, or the Moktesh was in that Tyropian Valley. It's where all of the economy of the city of Jerusalem took place. The Fish Gate, it is believed, was a gate that faced the north, and it became later known as the Damascus Gate. It's through the Fish Gate that the Babylonians came from the north and swept down through the land and breached the city walls, entering through the Damascus Gate to take over the city. So now scoot down to verse 14. The great day of the Lord is near. Stop right there. You have read, as I have read, many of the Old Testament prophets use this phrase, the day of the Lord. The most famous so far has been Joel, because his theme was the day of the Lord. 26 times, Old Testament prophets use the term the day of the Lord. This guy, Zephaniah, uses it 18 of those 26 times. So it's one of his major themes. The day of the Lord, he says, the great day of the Lord is near. It is near and hastens quickly. The noise of the day of the Lord is bitter. There the mighty men shall cry out. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of devastation and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. Now, what is the day of the Lord? I'll refresh your memory. The day of the Lord is simply a period of time in which there's direct intervention by God in human affairs. It's as if God says, you've had your day. The day of man is now over. I, God, am going to act supernaturally through a chain of events in a time period known as the day of the Lord. Typically, the term the day of the Lord is used eschatologically. That is, speaking of the end times, the end of days, the tribulation period or the great tribulation period. And certainly the great tribulation is the ultimate day of the Lord. Time of judgment, time of divine intervention, very graphically described. In fact, there's no subject or just about no other subject in the Bible with as great a detail as the day of the Lord. Prophets spoke about it. Jesus elaborated on it. Matthew 24, Luke 21, the Gospel of Mark. Chapters 6 through 19 of the book of Revelation are totally devoted to the day of the Lord. So the day of the Lord often speaks eschatologically, or the end of times. But sometimes it is used in a local, immediate, non-eschatological manner. Now, can I complicate it even further? Sometimes it's used both ways, where a prophet will look at a day of the Lord that is coming for the local people that he's writing to, but that is a picture of the far off, greater, big day of the Lord that is coming. And this prophet does that. What he's saying here is basically, a day of the Lord is coming on Judah, and that day of the Lord is going to be like the day of the Lord that's coming on the whole world. There's a microcosm or an example or a preview of coming attractions or a harbinger, whatever word you want to use to describe it.
Although we may not often hear sermons or do studies in Zephaniah, it's just as relevant for us as any other book of the Bible. And hopefully today's study has shown you that. And hopefully this series is showing you the value of going through the entire Bible from cover to cover. Remember, if you'd like more resources to help you go through the entire Bible in studies of your own, you can find some when you visit BibleFrom30K.org. That's BibleFrom30K.org. And we're almost out of time for today, but if you'd like a copy of today's teaching, you can order one when you visit ConnectionRadio.org or when you call 1-800 972-922-1888. If you contact us for the first time today, we'll also send you a free teaching from Skip called What on Earth is Going on in Heaven? And that free offer is available for anyone who has never before contacted us. So if that's you, call us today at 1-800-922-1888 or write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. We'll continue through Zephaniah and Haggai next time, so be sure to join us for more of the Bible from 30,000 feet here in The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.